Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, folks, it's 11:30 p.m. where you find me, Catherine Whittaker, in London. It's 12:30 p.m. where you find Matt Roberts in Malaga. And it's also 11:30 p.m. where you find David Law safely tucked up in bed in Solihull. And trust me, that is the best place for him right now. He'll be back on another podcast coming to you soon. But yeah, for once he took our advice, didn't he, Matt? So here we are.
Here we are, those determined Aussies. We were having actual conversations about an early podcast recording today and what that might look like and how we might do it. But Alex de Minaur had other ideas.
Yeah, tennis is so bizarre, isn't it? The difference between an 8 p.m. recording and a midnight recording was just one little Alex de Minaur. Total feast or famine. And for the drama, obviously I love the drama. I'm glad the fight back happened, but obviously, well, mostly for your sleep's sake, Matt, an earlier recording would have had its benefits, wouldn't it? But look, there are upsides too, in that we got a really dramatic tie, we got another deciding doubles rubber, we got another last minute sub in of an unexpected singles player into the doubles lineup, except it turns out that Jiří Lehečka is no Otto Virtanen. And he certainly won't be feeling like an Otto Virtanen right now, will he, Matt?
That's right. No, tough day for Jiří Lehečka, coming so close to winning the singles, then being sent out again in the doubles. Look, I have to admit, I didn't make it to the Czech press conference at just gone midnight. I went to the Australia press conference and then got the car home to record this podcast. But I do wonder whether Jiří Lehečka sort of wanted to go back out to try and make amends or try and erase the memory or something of that singles match that he had, and you know, try and put it on his own terms and still try and deliver that point for Czechia. And look, Czechia are not blessed with doubles options. He is their best player, so I can understand why they would want him on the doubles court. But that was a tough ask after such a heartbreaking singles defeat to then and a grueling physically singles match as well to then go out and play doubles. And yeah, it didn't pay off for Czechia, but maybe they didn't have a doubles team that could beat Ebden and Purcell. Maybe they simply needed to get it done in the singles. I suspect that probably was the case.
Yeah, no matter what the situation with Lehečka, the Czechia were always going to be underdogs, heavy underdogs in that doubles, weren't they? I mean, the real horror of Jiří Lehečka's day was in the singles, wasn't it? Czechia, his country, are leading by one win to nothing, courtesy of best tennis player in the world, Tomáš Macháč, his straight sets victory over Jordan Thompson. And Yuri Lehechka is playing lights out tennis, looking also not unlike the best tennis player in the world. That arm of his is so fast. Sometimes he does look like he can pull off some serious stuff on his tennis court. And for about an hour and a half today, he did. And then he gets into a position of serving for the match. And look, it's 6-1, half a dozen of the other, isn't it? Alex de Minaur asked the questions, and Yuri Lehechka gave Alex de Minaur and Leighton Hewitt and the Australians the answers that they wanted and needed to hear in that game. And that was kind of it, wasn't it? Except for a circle that game moment in the third set when Alex de Minaur, having led by a break in that deciding set, he got pegged back, didn't he? And then, so they're on serve and then he goes love 40 down and you think, wow. But then he saves it and thus broke the soul of Yuri Lehechka, who still had quite a lot of tennis ahead of him at that point in the evening.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to highlight that game in the third set because, you know, I think the headline of this is Yuri Lehechka's leading the match 6-4, 5-3, serving for it at 6-4, 5-4, and got, look, let's be honest, he got pretty tight. He gave Alex de Minaur a sniff and de Minaur ran with it and did what he does. But you're right, he then had another chance in the third set. He had that love 40 on the de Minaur serve. And I found de Minaur's body language in that final set really fascinating. And I asked him about it in the press conference afterwards because he was pulling off these remarkable things. He was, you know, scrambling defensively and hustling and, yeah, holding from love 40 down. And just to the side of the court, his whole teammates, his whole bench of supporters were going wild and crazy and jumping up and down. And he wasn't. He was really quite calm in that final set. And I asked him about that, whether that was a deliberate attempt to sort of keep a lid on those emotions. And he said yes, because earlier in the match, whenever I celebrated wildly or did a big come on, it brought out the best in Yuri Lehechka. So he said that he sort of clocked that during the match and he's shifted his own demeanor on court, which I thought was really interesting. And it helped him because you got the sense that he was kind of right where he wanted to be. You know, he lives for those moments, Alex de Minaur, when the odds are stacked against him and his back's against the wall and he's got the green and gold of Australia. And that's why he plays tennis. And he delivered in all of those big moments today. And, you know, you can just tell how proud Leighton Hewitt is of him and the rest of the team. A sort of a classic Alex de Minaur performance and kind of not even the most remarkable Alex de Minaur comeback that I've watched in the last few weeks, you know, having seen him beat Andy Murray a couple of times from a similar sort of position of it looking bleak and managing to turn it around. And he said that he thinks it's his reputation that kind of precedes him and was maybe in Lehechka's mind a little bit, you know, because Lehechka knew that Alex de Minaur isn't over till it's over. And I think that's true. I think Lehechka did get pretty tight in the big moments, having played so well for so much of the match.
And it's a technique that doesn't, it suddenly starts to look stiff, doesn't it? It kind of relies on that very free right arm of his. In the words of Alex de Minaur himself in his on-court post-match interview with Barry Cowan, he said, wins like that are a part of my identity. I thought that was such a great self-analysis. And there was a hefty whack of Leighton Hewitt's fingerprint on it as well. I mean, talk about built in his image. He must feel so misty-eyed watching Alex de Minaur out there. I really do feel like Alex de Minaur could be in the most horrible form imaginable. He could be playing like that Patrick bloke yesterday. What was his surname? The one that may or may not be less good than your mate Andy.
Cal Cavalta.
him. I feel like Alex de Minaur could be playing like him or like your mate Andy, and Leighton Hewitt would still pick him. Do you know what I mean? Like, he is just my guy.
Yeah, 100%. And I tried to get Leighton Hewitt to really talk about that in the press conference. And, I said there were some points there, you know, a backhand topspin lob or a side-to-side defensive hustle where, you know, we could have been watching you, Leighton. And he was sort of shaking his head during the question. And, it was very late, and he had spent sort of 7 hours on the sidelines cheering. I don't think he was at his perhaps best in that press conference, Leighton Hewitt. And look, he was just saying, just yes, he recognises that, but he's also his own man out on the court and his own player, you know, as you would kind of expect him to say. But I just can't help but see the comparisons. You know, they are, you know, both counterpunctures, both quite sort of diminutive compared to a lot of the other players, and just they just have this will and this spirit about them. And I think, you know, Hewitt has been a real mentor to Alex de Minaur, and it is a special connection they have. He is, as I completely agree, he's just always going to go to de Minaur and pick him in every sort of situation.
Yeah, they're terriers, aren't they? The doubles, it's another doubles. I know this was the only match of the day today, Matt, that you weren't quite able to pay sort of point-by-point attention to, as you do with most of the Davis Cup matches while you're there. It's another one that I'd say don't go back and watch. it was another really serve-dominated men's doubles match. I'm really starting to board your train of... men's doubles just isn't it as a spectacle. Certainly not ones like this where it's just very one-sided. There's one team serving out of a tree. I think Ebden and Purcell dropped 7 points on serve all match. They were winning 80% of points on their first serve and 85% on their second serve. No break points faced. It felt less close to me than the scoreline, which was 6-4, 7-5, I think, or 6-3, 7-5. They were on paper the dominant team, and they were in practice the dominant team, which is why it must have just been so crushing for Lehechka to have been on the cusp of winning. It just felt like it went from they're just about to win to, oh my God, well, they've got no chance now in about 20 minutes.
Mm. Yeah. And no chance, but also you knew it was kind of going to be slow and long, because, you know, as soon as Alex de Minaur won that second set in the singles, you sort of made him favourite for the third. Okay, it was a very close third set and he had to dig really deep, but he did win it. Then Lehechka comes out, he has to play a whole doubles match, but you know the Australians are favourite in it. Yeah, it was sort of inevitable, but sort of long at the same time. And I felt the final sort of nail in the coffin or dagger through the heart of Jiří Lehechka was the game that Ebden and Purcell broke in the second set to give them a chance to serve it out. I believe, as I looked up from my writing, I was looking at the screen, and I believe it was two passing shot winners that clipped the net cord to sort of help them get that break for the Australians. And I just thought, Jiří, it is not your day. All the tennis signs are telling us that, oh, it's just not your day.
And as much as it must be absolutely miserable to be Jiří Lehechka right now, it might actually be more miserable to be Thomas Mahatch. I don't know. I guess it depends on your psychology. Like, is it worse to have done your bit, played out of your mind, and that is team competition, isn't it? But it must still feel like, for goodness sake, guys, you know, like Novak Djokovic alongside Viktor Troitsky in the doubles. It's rough for him because he was so good, Matt.
He is so good. I know we have this bit going, and look, of course he's not the best player in the world, but when you watch him, you do just think, how is he not ranked so much higher? You know, he's I think he's currently somewhere in the 70s. And to me, skill set wise, he's really seems like he should be in the top 20 for sure. He can do so many things with a tennis ball. You know, he can create angles that don't really seem to exist, and he can mix up the height and the pace and the spins of his shots. He's one of those players who's got time on the ball. You know, he never really seems to look too rushed. He can sense when a ball is short, and he latches onto it quickly and follows it into the net. He does so many things so well. He perhaps doesn't have the biggest serve, and I sort of asked him what the one thing he thinks he sort of needs to work on to try and get even higher in the rankings, and he immediately said mindset, which kind of checks out, because that is something that you can't see, isn't it? You know, he passes the eye test completely, but clearly there has been something holding him back, and he mentioned this mindset, which he didn't sort of go into detail about what that was, but you know, I think we did see the odd little bit of it today, perhaps, where you know he needed two attempts to serve it out, and I think perhaps in some big moments he slightly backed off, but generally I thought he was awesome today. I love watching him play. And he made life really difficult for Jordan Thompson, who had beaten Mahatch earlier this year in Miami qualifying. And maybe that was part of the reason why he was sent out to play him. But matchup-wise, it just didn't look good for Thompson, because he likes coming forward. He likes coming to the net, and Mahatch was passing him, and he likes that target. And he just made life really awkward for Thompson. So I don't know whether maybe Leighton Hewitt considered, you know, using Popperin, who is a sort of big baseliner, and trying to match Mahatch that way. But yeah, I felt like the matchup did play into Mahatch's hands, and I thought he was brilliant.
I haven't thought through what the matchups would be. I'm doing this off the top of my head. I would be surprised to see Jordan Thompson again. What do you think?
I don't think I would be surprised, because a bit like what we were saying about Alex de Minaur, I do think Hewitt trusts him and likes him, because he is dogged and determined, and but he perhaps didn't play that well today. He described it as a 10 out of 10 frustrating match. They're the strong favorite, I think, in that singles against Finland, if Ruusuvuori can't take to the court, you know, because then they're playing our friend Patrick Kalkovalta again, aren't they? And honestly, anyone on the Australian team will beat him. I feel pretty confident
of
that.
I mean, unless he's in a wheelchair, he can take to the court, right? What is the most outrageous example of sort of just a tactical deployment?
They have to do that.
Of a sacrifice of a player just to get the player that you want in at number two. Like, in theory, he could limp out there, play one point and retire.
Yeah. And he's not going to do that. I mean, he has been hitting in practice. Like, he can play.
If you're the Finnish captain, are you saying, Emil, it really does it? I don't care what your situation is. You go out there, do what you can. It's not about that.
Yeah. I mean, he simply has to be on the lineup.
He has to prevent Patrick, what's his name, from playing tennis on Friday.
I think that's what I'm saying. I think that's what I'm saying. Because, look, I don't think Otto Virtanen is going to beat Alex de Minaur. But
no, he
might beat Jordan Thompson or Aleksi Popperin. That is the best bet Finland have. And if they get it to the doubles, okay, they'd still be the underdogs because, as we said, Ebden and Purcell, great team that Australia have got. But Finland have got Harry Heliovaara. He's a very good doubles player, and they can bring in Virtanen as well. So they could hold their own in that doubles. So they just have to desperately try and find a way to win a singles. And the way to do that is not Kalkovalta and Virtanen. It is Virtanen and an injured Ruusuvuori.
I'd love to see him go out there with his leg in a cast or something. just it be extremely obvious what's happening. And I would think, fine, these are the rules.
Do what you got to do.
Think these are how the rules. These are how the rules should be. And yeah, play with this like round robin tennis, isn't it? I wouldn't have had a problem with Jannik Sinner not giving full effort against Holger Rune. For me, that would just have been, you know, playing with the hand, the round robin hands that you're dealt. I'm sure there's some people that, in fact, I definitely know there are some people that would have had an issue with it. But yeah, Emil, if you're listening and you want to go out there with your leg, I don't even know what his injury is, but if you want to go out there with a full body cast, I support you. If you went out with his racket arm in a sling, imagine. Just on the Aussies, before we come on to look ahead to tomorrow's ties, because I know you've been in press conferences today with the Brits and the Serbs, I heard both Leighton Hewitt and Alex de Minaur on BBC Radio earlier. Russell Fuller of BBC Radio is out there in Malaga, and he had a good chunk of time on their sports programme this evening. And obviously it was mostly dedicated to the GB team, but there was also some existential Davis Cup stuff. He had an interview with David Haggerty and Mark Woodford, who works for the ITF as well, talking about sort of consulting on tweaks to the format and so on. And there was a clip from Alex de Minaur from the preview press conference rather than from tonight's press conference, saying that he hates the format, that he would change it back in a heartbeat, saying exactly what Leighton Hewitt said about it when asked. And I do respect Australians' right to feel particularly aggrieved about it, because while Mark Woodford was on the radio, Russell Fuller put it to Mark Woodford that Australians are far less likely to ever have these Davis Cup finals at home in Australia. And Mark Woodford said, no, we'd love it if Tennis Australia put in a bid in, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't, I'm sure he means that in principle, but I think in practice that's pie in the sky, really. And I really respect the Australians' right to feel particularly hard done by being denied home and away ties like they used to have. But I also so respect that they are able to make space for that strength of negative feeling about the changes to the competition and the resentment about how it impacts them, about how it impacts tennis, but also how it impacts them personally. And yet their strength of commitment to doing their best in the competition regardless. It's such a grown-up position that they're able to take, making space for those two things. Alex de Minaur is still, you know, quoting Stefanos Tsitsipas, willing to die out there, isn't he? Leighton Hewitt's still on the verge of giving himself a coronary the whole time for this competition that they feel deep in their soul has been trashed.
Mm.
And trashed to their particular detriment. I just think it's so grown up of them to not cut off their nose to spite their face.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I really respect their right to think that this competition could be better than it is, and their disappointment and frustration that they're, you know, that they're not getting to play ties at home, and with the current format that seems even more likely. And also the way the format works is sort of, if you do well in it, and Australia continually do well in it, it makes it less likely that you're going to get a home tie, because you don't have to play the qualifiers, for example. You know, Australia got straight through to this year's finals in or the group stages of the finals in September, because they were, you know, because they were runners up last year, and they may well be in that position again. So their own commitment is sort of part of the reason why they're not getting these home titles, because they're committed and they're doing so well. And there have been other big tennis nations who have got a great sense of respect and history and tradition in this competition who haven't managed to balance out their strong feelings of resentment for the format changes with a commitment to still doing so well. Kind of looking at you, France. Like, France have been very absent from the Davis Cup finals. You know, I don't think they've sort of been in it since the format changed at the latter stages. And, you know, part of that is they don't quite have the same strength of players that they used to have. But they're not that much worse than Australia, really, when you think of, you know, Manarino and Humbert and Fils. You know, there's plenty of good French players, but the whole attitude of that nation now towards the Davis Cup is pretty negative. And I understand it, but they haven't been able to overcome that in the way that the Aussies have. And for Leighton Hewitt in particular, the fact that he's out there as captain, you know, and he spoke about the fact that he just feels like he owes Australian tennis. He felt like they gave him so much, and he says, "I owe it to them to get these boys." He calls them all boys, and you know, another trophy. And it's been 20 years since Australia won the Davis Cup, which equals the longest ever drought for Australia in this tournament. You know, going all the way back to when they first used to win it as Australasia. I think they've won it 28 times altogether, and they've never had a period longer than 20 years without winning it. And that previous 20-year period was 1919 to 1939. You know, they are a proud nation in Davis Cup, and they don't like the new format, but they still like the essence of the competition and giving their all. And I really do respect that. And it's led by Leighton Hewitt. And in Alex de Minaur, he's got someone who just totally gets it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Right, looking ahead to tomorrow, this is when things get fun/sleep-deprived, depending on how you look at it and what part of the world you're in right now, because we step things up to two quarterfinals tomorrow. We have Italy against the Netherlands at 10 p.m. local time, 10 a.m. local time rather, and then we have Serbia against Great Britain at 4 p.m. local time. You spoke to the Serbs and to the Brits today, Matt, is that right?
Yes, was in those press conferences. Quite interesting. Serbia made the point that it's been hard to find left-handed practice partners because GB is a very, very left-handed team. You know, you got Jack Draper, Cameron Norrie, and also Liam Brody has come in, and he's also left-handed. So all of the singles players are left-handed. So Djokovic said, "Yeah, we've kind of been struggling to find hitting partners." But then Draper made the point that it's kind of tricky for the Brits as well because they're practicing with each other, and they need to be playing right-handers. They have brought a couple of juniors with them who are right-handed, and yeah, I just think Leon Smith sort of said kind of what we were talking about the other day, in that, sure, they are missing Andy Murray and they are missing Dan Evans, but in some respect, there have been some advantages to players not being available, in that it's very clear now what the task is for Britain. No one's wondering about who's playing. No one's wondering about what their position is in the team, wondering about what the possible doubles team might be. Okay, they've lost the element of surprise, but they're also able to just fully prepare for individually their own task at hand. I suppose Jack Draper doesn't quite know who he's going to be playing. There are some options there with Jero or Ketsmanovic or Lajovic. If I had to predict, I think it would be Jero, but I'm not confident about that. But, you know, and for Cameron Norrie, I was reminded that the last time he played Novak Djokovic, there was some aggro, wasn't there? Because Norrie hit the ball at him, and Djokovic did not enjoy that at all.
Aggro that was since stoked by Andy Murray.
Yes.
On Instagram.
On the Instagram comments. Delicious.
Yeah. Fantastic, yeah, right in the sweet spot. Do you think the loss of surprise is a factor at all? I mean, in terms of number one, doesn't matter. It's Novak Djokovic. Don't think he gives two hoots who he plays on whatever team. In terms of the number two position, they're not being denied any element of surprise at all, especially given that Jack Draper is a lefty and. You know, I suppose, generally speaking, that could be just a bit of an ace up the sleeve, couldn't it? You know, you've been practicing against righties and boom, lefty. Mm.
Yeah, I think it's a factor. But equally, I think it's good for Jack Draper to know well in advance that he's playing and just get ready, just get in the mindset. You know, he knows he has to win that match. That is a must-win match for Jack Draper because, look, Cameron Norrie, even in the best form in the world, I'm not backing him to beat Novak Djokovic. Cameron Norrie out of form, I'm not backing to beat Novak Djokovic. Cameron Norrie out of form against Novak Djokovic in Davis Cup, who hasn't lost a completed match in this competition since 2009. He's won 20.
Yeah, you might as well say, might as well send Patrick over
there. I mean, for real. He's won 20 matches in a row in this competition, Novak Djokovic. And that was a retirement, his last loss. It's a longer streak if you include completed matches. He's desperate to win it for Serbia. He's made that clear how much of a priority it is. The fact he's here just shows that it's a priority, you know, coming off the back of Turin. But I am desperate to see Novak Djokovic in a deciding doubles match. I really, really want to see that.
Go on, Jack, just give us
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's what I want. He's lost four of his last five Davis Cup doubles matches, Djokovic. And, you know, sort of with different partners, you know,
Who do you think his preferred partner is? Because he will get to choose, right? Mm. Ultimately, what Novak Djokovic wants, he gets. And
yeah,
quite right too.
It was highly amusing. His press conference. Yes, that's That's what I mean. It was the team press conference, and it went on for 20 minutes, and Novak Djokovic spoke for, I would say, 19 minutes and 50 seconds, and there was just a 10 seconds of Viktor Troitsky in there. And he said, you know, when it comes to doubles, we don't have double specialists, we're singles guys, but, you know, we're all ready to play in the various combinations. And I was like, you mean you're ready to pick your partner? I think Kecmanovic, but I'm basing that purely on the fact that they entered Paris together a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, forgot that.
And played a match.
Yeah, why that was a rogue move, wasn't it? Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Unless
I suppose Djokovic hadn't played in a few weeks. Maybe he just wanted some reps, some matches. But the fact he, you know, picked a Serbian partner, and he knows he's got this Davis Cup coming up, maybe that was a little hint. And the other reason I'm excited for this tie is because we're expecting a great crowd. I think, you know, yesterday we had the amazing Finnish support. Today was fine. You know, it wasn't electric, but there was a good number of supporters from each country there, particularly the Czechs, of course. But tomorrow, the word is that there's going to be 5,000 British fans in the arena. 3,000 have bought tickets through the LTA and are sort of coming over from Britain, supposedly. And then they're expecting a couple of thousand expats or, you know, people who are out here to come as well. And Djokovic hinted that they're expecting plenty of sort of Serbian support as well. And, you know, I think when Djokovic is playing, we always see pockets of loud Serbian support, don't we? So I'm expecting that to be the case. So I think it could be pretty fiery, which is, you know, absolutely what we want.
Absolutely. That sounds fantastic. Italy against the Netherlands to start the day tomorrow. Jannik Sinner's going to play, I think, unless you tell me otherwise.
Yeah, no, I think so. I'd be surprised if he came here and then didn't play, you know.
Elena Rybakina says hi.
Touché. But I really don't know who's gonna be their number two. I like our now.
Who would you pick?
I would pick Sonego.
Okay.
I like Arnaudi generally. I think he's a very good player on the rise. But he doesn't have a lot of experience. I like Musetti on clay, and I like Sonego in Davis Cup.
Musetti's not been doing anything, has he? Musetti's been quite bad.
Yeah, I think that would be a risk. I mean, maybe he will play.
I would...
He's certainly been practicing very hard, Musetti. He's sort of been practicing.
Has he?
Like he is going to play.
I don't know. He doesn't strike me as a Davis Cup guy, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think that's a big call for Valandri to get that one right.
And the Netherlands, any possibility of any surprises there?
No, I don't think so. I think that's going to be Van der Zandschulp and Griekspoor.
And Griekspoor's at one,
yeah,
isn't he? He's their number one now. So that's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I, in my head, those two players are pretty even.
Yeah.
There's a lot of teams with a vast gap between one and two in this competition, and they don't have one extraordinary. They don't have a Novak Djokovic or a Jannik Sinner, but they've got two really solid top. I mean, Van der Zandschulp's dropped off a bit, but he's a U.S. Open quarterfinalist, isn't he? They're both extremely solid top 30-ish.
I think
singles ranking 51 at the moment.
That sounds about right.
And decent doubles team as well. Yeah, it's less eye catching than the Serbia GB tie, but it is interesting in its own way. That tie,
very, and exactly as you say, I think it's one of those ties where Italy are the favourites. You know, they have one of the form players in the world, but if it goes to the doubles, it flips, and I think the Dutch become the favourites. So that That's always interesting when that happens. So again, I would like that to go to a deciding doubles. Basically, I just want deciding doubles always. But if it does go to the deciding doubles, we could be in for a very late day because they give themselves 6 hours to get that first session done. But
it feels
unlikely that if it goes to the doubles that GB Serbia is going to be starting on time.
Sleep well, David. We need you back tomorrow. Or maybe not. Maybe it'll be just me and Matt, and that'll be fun too. But two ties. I mean, David will be up watching it, won't he?
Will.
That's the thing. He won't be able to resist. Somehow he resisted Max Purcell and Matt Ebden serving at 90%, winning 90% points on serve today. Don't know how he resisted that. Right. Well, that's tomorrow. Any other business from today, Matt, before we wrap things up?
Just the point that Novak Djokovic was making about the format. He was asked by Simon Briggs, actually, about the current Davis Cup format and sort of just what he makes of it. And I think he just raised an interesting point that he sort of prefaced it all by saying, I don't have a perfect format in mind, you know, and I think it's very hard to come up with one. But he just made the point that he thinks the finals always being in Spain, as they have been for the last few years, is a bit of a problem. And the fact that so few nations are getting to play home ties, you know, because of the group stage element. And I'm torn on that because I totally agree with him that it feels like the Davis Cup is a tournament, you know, it's a global international tournament. It's a tournament that travels. And it does feel a bit wrong to me that we're constantly in Spain for the finals, especially when Spain are not even here. At the same time, I do think we are seeing this year the benefit of the fact that they knew that this was going to be the venue a year in advance and they were able to sell tickets. And it does feel like the event has grown a bit. You know, there's an awful lot of branding of this event around the city. And I think the sort of continuity is quite helpful and it lets people know that it's, you know, a very legitimate competition that they might want to go to. And, you know, the fact that we're seeing so many Brits travelling and the fact that we've seen so many Finnish fans here and I think we're expecting a decent number of Dutch fans, you know, I think it's all helpful when you know what the venue is well in advance. And that was always a problem with the old format, maybe less so for the final because it was the final, they could sell it out. But you know, we do look back at the old Davis Cup through rose-tinted glasses, that there were amazing atmospheres, there absolutely were, and it was sort of better than anything that the new format has given us, for sure. But there were a lot of ties, home and away, where federations were scrambling to find a venue just a couple of months in advance, and they couldn't sell the tickets, and they weren't always brilliantly attended. That is just a fact, and the element of knowing the venue in advance is definitely a selling point. So I thought it was just an interesting point that he raised. And sort of feeling-wise, existentially, I sort of agree with him. But sort of the financial model says that sort of this one is better. And, you know, it's sometimes quite hard to argue with that. So, you know, just to sort of bring it back round, it just comes to there is kind of no perfect format here. And what we do understand is that there are absolutely no plans to change the format next year. It's going to be the same. But I do believe that discussions are taking place about what the format might look like in 2025. There's some new board members at the ITF, and I think they've all got sort of new ideas. And yeah, so it may well evolve in 2025. Next year, it's not going to be any different to what it is now. But It's just always on everyone's mind what is the best format for this competition. And everyone, fans, players, media, ITF staff and decision makers, you know, everyone's thinking about it and everyone's got a slightly different perspective and angle, and it's so, so hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a good point. You can agree that this is not ideal, whilst also the looking back with rose-tinted glasses is such an important point, isn't it? Because we do that with everything in life. You know, we remember the good stuff. Google Photos gave me a, you know, it packages up a group of photos and just presents it to you, whether it's something you want to be presented with or not.
I remember that being like an attack during the pandemic, where it was like, look what you were doing a year ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I deleted Google Photos during that time. Well, that is sort of related, because today it gave me a beautiful montage of 2020, and it made 2020 look like a banging year.
Right.
It just picked out the best, you know, the three occasions on which I smiled, probably all of them during a podcast. It looked, I was like, oh, take me back. That looked great. But it's that, isn't it? You know, that's, you remember the good stuff, just like Google Photos. Okay, that's it for today, I think, unless you have any other business.
No, that is your lot.
Only
at
sleep.
10 past 1.
Only sleep. Right, Matt, get to bed. David's been in bed for about 2 hours, which is absolutely the right thing for David.
And yet also about 2 hours after he originally said he was going to bed.
That is what annoys me. That's he says, I'm gonna get an early night tonight, and I punch the air and I say, brilliant, David, yes. And then at about 9:30 he starts talking about going to bed, and I'm like, yeah, this is good, yeah, great. And then at 11 PM he's still sending random messages about unimportant stuff. Non-time sensitive stuff. Anyway, what an enigma.
We love you, David.
We love you, David. Hope you're deeply asleep. We'll be back tomorrow with another podcast wrapping up those two really exciting looking ties. I was going to say hoping to have had two decisive double robbers, but I don't know. That doesn't mean good things for your sleep, does it, Matt? Anyway, we'll see what the day holds. We, of course, have our mascots. I've got Xenia. Xenia, we were denied the opportunity to throw a Hail Mary this week and choose Finland. So we've got, I think, Italy, but don't feel great about that. Matt's got Darwin. No.
Yeah.
Yes, you do have Darwin. Yeah. I thought you did a face at me there, like, no, I don't. Maybe it was a face of my prediction isn't going to come off.
Well, Finland. Hey, we made it.
Oh, you've got Finland. You're the reason I couldn't have Finland.
Yeah.
David's got Maisie and Australia?
No, Matthew in the newsletter went for Australia. I don't actually know who David went for in the end. Let me check.
Was it Czechia? No, he wouldn't have gone for the checks. Da, da, da.
I'm now scrolling, trying to find our own newsletter.
Great radio, in my, it's great.
In my inbox.
Oh, I'll do a plug for the newsletter while you're doing that. Do subscribe to the newsletter, folks. We don't usually disclose what's in there like we are doing here. David wouldn't let this happen on his watch.
Sorry. But
it's a tease, David. It's a tease.
And so many emails from people about the Davis Cup. David went for Serbia.
Oh, did he now?
Yeah.
So obvious, isn't he? Okay. Right, well, do subscribe to the newsletter. Billie Jean is sponsored by the birthday girl. Billie Jean King is 80 years young today. Happy birthday, Billie Jean King.
Happy birthday.
And, of course, she played tennis on her birthday, and that makes us all so happy. Mm.
Flashing those forehands, happy, I saw.
Flashing them, absolutely. Happy birthday, Billie Jean. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah, and Drew. Hello to you and thank you. And we will save shout-outs for when David is here, because a name connected only with somebody obscure from the 90s will come up. And then where would we be without David Law? So shout outs will be back when David's back and when we're all together, which will maybe be tomorrow, but will certainly be very soon. We will be back, some combination of us, definitely involving Matt Roberts because he's holding this thing together. We'll be back tomorrow with another Davis Cup Daily show. Thanks for listening. We'll speak to you then.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.